Hunter Show, and you know how we do things on these shows. This is a two-part show now, so let's go to part two.
I mean, it's possible it's not, but we'll see.
No, it's not possible. All right, there's a lot more to go. Let's go. Part two will be in the Land of the Rising Sun first. New Japan Pro Wrestling, where Tetsumi Fujinami, probably as part of an angle, announced that if Naoya Ogawa doesn't wrestle on the May 5th Fukuoka Dome show, they would never work for New Japan again. Ogawa apparently suffered a shoulder injury. Who knows what his work would have shoot here on the April 7th Tokyo Dome match with Shin Hashimoto, and asked that he be taken off the May 5th show and Hashimoto be put in his place. Yuji Nagata, in a Dome main event for the first time, said he has no interest in facing Hashimoto and wants Ogawa. Finally, just 3 days before the show, Antonio Inoki on May 2nd held a press conference to announce that Ogawa would be in the match. So in the previous top guy, he has to do what top guys for him did, and that's wrestle main events where he's not 100%. Hashimoto then announced he would make an announcement after the show as well that he'll retire and when he'll come back. As storyline goes, Hashimoto had a two-hour meeting with Fujinami on May 2nd, saying he doesn't need the money and doesn't have to wrestle and hasn't decided what he's going to do other than saying he wasn't going to join UFO. Hashimoto has dropped 12 more pounds, going a week on an all-liquid diet. Oh, the drama in Naoya Ogawa. He, as much as he did great business for New Japan, he was a major issue. And guess what? I mean, that's not a singles match. It's a tag match. Nagata Nakanishi defend the tag titles against Ogawa and Murakami, which you can guess who did the job. but yeah, so this whole thing, I mean, it is so weird in this whole storyline of Hashimoto and this whole 2000-2001 shit. Nobody knows what's real and what's fake.
Because at this point, there's already A01, right?
No, it's 2000, Bix.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I'll just tell everyone, we were just finishing recording the Patreon show, so my brain was in 2001 mode.
Yeah, so yeah, we're still in 2000 here.
That's right, right, because they have the big... Yeah, never mind. It took me a second, because we were jumping back and forth and are fairly close in proximity in a way we're usually not when we do that. Yeah, I mean, we're never going to know.
No.
I mean, just straight up, unless there's something that's come out in Japan that needs to be translated that we don't know about, we're never going to know.
Probably so, and Hashimoto, you know, not being with us definitely hurts that, so, yeah. All right, Atsushi Onita announced he'd be having a knee operation in May in the United States, which he's been putting off waiting for the much-hyped singles match Riki Choshu to come off. Fukuoka Dome show would have been the perfect place because it has such a weak lineup and such a hard-to-feel building. While the match would have been horrible, the curiosity would at least sold some tickets. Onita also announced he would be promoting his own show on May 21st in Tokyo as a retirement match for fake Onita, real name Toshiki Moritani, or Nisi Onita, who has an internal disease.
And if you're hearing the phrase internal disease or internal organ disease in Japan, that's not good.
Yeah,
that usually means stomach cancer or something like that.
But I don't remember him dying. So, or at least hearing about that.
I remember the retirement for Nisei Onita. Yeah. I don't remember if he passed away or not.
Well, anyway. Fujinami is strongly headed at their Make This Show is the start of the one-year-long retirement tour of it that he will have, which will end on May 5th, 2001, Fukuoka Dome. He's also talked about trying to put together a match with Hashimoto versus K1 superstar Mike Bernardo. Well, Fujinami doesn't retire in May 5th, so. And Hashimoto doesn't fight Mike Bernardo. So there you go.
Yeah, oh, and I think Dave has his name a little wrong, but yeah, Nisei Onita ends up doing MMA into the 2000s.
Well, he went retiring for because of an internal disease.
Yeah, and then he does go back into wrestling as well after he, I guess, recovers from whatever this is. Looking at cage match real quick, he's out, I guess. I mean, it's Japanese indie results, so who knows? But they don't have anything for him between May and December. And then nothing between December and the following May.
There's already considerable concern that WCW will pull Billy Kidman at the last minute of the Super Juniors tournament tour and they'll rebook everything. They did.
Well, WWE did.
2000 picks.
My brain is melting. I'm sorry.
God almighty. All right.
I don't know. I don't know why this game. It's right in front of me. I don't know why it's happening
either. All right, April 30th, Beppu B-Con
Lab. That WCW stuff was very energy consuming.
I guess.
It all sucked my entire life force.
3,500 fans. WCW taping. Hiroshi Tanahashi over Katsuri Shibata in your opener. Tadao Yasuda and El Samurai over Dan Devine and Chuck Palumbo. Young Lions Cup, Shinya Mikabe beat Kenzo Suzuki. Koji Kanemoto and Shinjiro Tani over Jushin Liger and Minoru Tanaka. Junji Arata and Takashi Iizuka over Super J and Hiro Saino. Tetsuya Shigoto, Michio Shiohara and Akira over Kensuke Sasaki, Shoko Shinaka, Kendo Kishin. And Manabu Nakanishi, Yuji Nagata and Yutaki Yoshie, members of G-Eggs, over Masahiro Chono, Hiroshi Tenzan, and Satoshi Kojima, your main event. So.
And looking at how these results are that you copied from one of the German sites, Devil Windmill Suplex Hold, which is what it has listed for the Harada and Iizuka win, that would be the Harada Hammerlock Suplex finish?
Yes.
Okay.
Battle Arts may be doing a program for the company president position with current president Yuki Ishikawa facing off with Mitsuyu Nagai.
That sounds violent.
I don't think they did that storyline, so...
Yeah, I mean, we were watching a lot of Battle Arts in 2000. I don't remember that.
Big Japan Pro Wrestling. They ran a show with Sapporo Tyson Gym on April 29th. And not just one show. They ran back-to-back days there. 29th, we had 1,800 fans.
No, no.
Our opening match is your Neo match for Bix. Yoshika Tamura and Kyoko Ichiki over Masai Genki and Chihiro Nakano in 1555.
No. Bix.
Then a BJW Best tag match. Kamikaze and Daisuke Sakamoto over Miz Teo and Reiji Ito. Winger and Jun Kasai over Harley Lewis and Terry Boy.
Harley Lewis got a Big Japan tour? Also, Miz Teo is working under both names?
And then we have a World Stream Cup match as Tower of Doom beat Mustafa Saeed.
Well, Tower of Doom has not yet been arrested for... possession of child pornography, so makes sense that he's still able to travel internationally at this time.
Abdullah the Butcher, Crazy Sheik, and Masashi Shimotegi over Abdullah Kobayashi, Dakakuba Benke, and Dory Boy in Abdullah's 30th anniversary in Japan match.
I forgot, Dory Boy is who? Or is it Teo?
I'm not sure. I don't remember.
I'm looking real quick because it may have been that he... Oh, no, Dory Boy is Kajika.
Okay. Well, there you go. That makes sense. All right. And then we have Big Japan's CCW World War 2000 as Zandig and Whitebeater beat Ryuji Yamakawa and Mike Samples. And then your main event, World of String Club tournament match, Block C. Barbed wire board, fluorescent light tube, board death match, Shadow WX over Tomoki Homma. Next night, 1,800 fans at Thiessen Hall. We have Ryuji Ito over Daisuke Sakamoto, Chiro Nakano over Kyoko Ichiki. Tower of Doom, Harley Lewis, and Terry Boy over the Winger, Kamikaze, and Mustafa Saeed.
Okay.
Another 30th anniversary Abby match is Miz Teo, Abdullah Kobayashi, and Dakakuba Benke beat Abdullah, Crazy Sheik, and Masashi Motegi. Samples over Shadow WX in 58 seconds in a World of Stream Cup match. Barefoot, barbed wire board, fluorescent light tube boards, death match. Mr. Danger, Mitsuhiro Matsunaga over Jun Kasai. And then Tomoki Homma and Ryuji Yamakawa over Zandig and Whitebeater. Where Yamakawa got to get the pin on Whitebeater.
Jesus.
So there you go, Bix. Big Japan. Feud with CCW is getting hot here.
AKA the thing that ruined the interest in Big Japan among American fans.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, this might be the first tour, right? With the CCW fans?
Yes, I think it is.
Because didn't the Shadow WX Fire incident... Oh, no, that's on this show.
Well, there you go.
Right?
That's why
Mike Sample, Shadow WX. That. Yeah. Should we talk about this? Let me see if there's
something
online.
I doubt it. Big Japan stuff's hard to find. Hard to find online. You might get lucky with some old Big Japan.
Well, because it's Samurai TV stuff. Yes. No, it's on YouTube. I don't know. Give me 1 second, then. We should probably actually play this. I have to, because we weren't doing any clips. I didn't have Chrome open. So give me 1 second. So we can do this. All right. So they're having a match. I honestly don't remember how it happens, how Shadow WX catches fire. So it's probably good that we're about to play the clip as I try to find where Chrome is in my... All right, here we go. Oh, it's a lights out, electrified, like, light tube thing, right?
It's a fluorescent board death match, yeah.
Yes, okay. So, here we go. The clip's only a minute long, anyway. Oh, no, excuse me. No, this was February. This is a different match.
Oh, my God.
So, the fire incident was... So, this must be playing off the fire incident, right?
All that for nothing, yes.
No, well, it's confusing. It's the fire incident says was February 22nd.
Okay. All right, let's move on.
You can see how I was confused there that they did another fluorescent light tube match that went a minute?
It's Big Japan!
No, but that went a minute?
It's the same crew!
But this only went a minute because of the fire incident.
Okay.
So why are they going a minute?
I don't know.
I'd like to apologize to my wife, Nancy. But anyway.
All right, let's go to Capture.
Yes.
They ran Oda War Community Plaza on May 4th for 220 fans. Yusuke Kikuchi over Yuzo Suzuki. Tadahiro Fushizaki over Tadamasaku Toba. Daisaku over Yusaku.
Of course.
Koki Kitahara over Kazunobu Nakamura. And Osamu Tachikara and Nobutaka Araya over Tomohiro Ishii and Ni Hao in your main event.
Nothing like Tomohiro Ishii doing some no-ring shoot style.
Well, you got Araya there, too, and Osamu, and of course Ni Hao, the ace of Capture.
Yeah, so it's basically Ni Hao and some Tenryu understudies.
Pretty much. DDT.
And Koki Kitahara in the semi-main, too.
Yeah, DDT, May 1st, Kitazawa Town Hall. Shinito Naito over Issei Fujiwara. Or Fujisawa, I think it's misspelled. It's Fujisawa. A Poison Sawada Black and Masahiko Orihara over Neo Winger and Phoenix Crow. Karasu. Nobutaka Araya and Isiding Yoshida over Koichi Kimura and Kengo Takai. Mikami over Takashi Sasaki. And President Senshiro Takagi over Tanamasaku Toba in your main event.
Again, early on, at least for Americans, DDT was a work rate indie. I mean, it is again now. Well, it's not indie anymore, but still.
Yeah.
They're not big into the sports entertainment yet.
Yeah, this is before I started watching, so I really haven't seen much of 2000 DDT. No. But
And one of the reasons that they're not doing sports entertainment yet is that someone else is.
FMW on May 3rd at Hakata Star Lanes for 2,700 fans at three-way as Kataru Kanemura beat Riki Fuji and Crazy Boy. Willie Takayama flying Kirichihara and Ikaro Nakayama over Azusa Kudo, Emi Murakawa, and Yuka Nakamura. Andy Fatu and Manny Smalls. Yes, Umaga and Rosie over Hideki Asaka and Yoshinori Sasaki. WWE six-man tag titles Koji Nakagawa, Jado, and Gato. Defeated Kota Fuyuki, Kyoko Inoue, and Chocobal Mukai to win the titles.
Chocobal.
Willie Williams over Tetsuya Kuroda.
What?
And Masato Tanaka and Sabu over H and Mr. Ganosuke.
I do not remember how they ended up getting teamed up here.
And H did the job to Masato with the Diamond Dust.
H, of course, being Hayabusa. Yes, and you neglected to mention that the winners of the six-man tag title match are members of Team No Respect.
Against Fuyuki, yes. Michinoku Pro, Ichinoseki Cultural Center on May 3rd. Masaki Mochizuki over Suba Genjin. Jinsei Senzaki over Kazuya Yuasa. Masked Angel Rosetta and Chaperito Asari over Kyoketsu Nizumi Maijo Devil Rat and Saya Genjin.
That would be Saya Endo, I presume.
Yeah.
Doing a Genjin gimmick.
Yes. Great Sasuke, Takamasu Form, Grand Hamada over Sasuke the Great, Grand Apache, and Chad Collier.
You mean noted mentalist Chad Collier. When I say mentalist, I mean stage performer, not using that as a slur for someone with a mental illness.
And Minoru Fujita went to a 30-minute draw with Sumo Dandy Fuji in the main event.
Well, that's one of the fun things about Michinoku Pro in this era, is that you get to see a bunch of the Toriumon guys doing other stuff.
Yeah. And that's an interesting finish. A 30-minute draw.
Yeah, how often do they do draws in Michinoku Pro?
Very, very, very rarely, if any, yeah.
Yeah, especially here, well, it's 30 minutes, but no title online or anything either.
Yeah. All right, Osaka Pro. They ran in Nagoya on May 1st at Club Ozone in front of 380 fans. Dial caught policeman over Masato Kisuji and Shusaku Wada. Different style fight, Takahiro Murahama over Monkey Magic.
That's Daiki Nishida, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Or wait, or was Nishida in Michinoku Pro by this point?
I don't remember the timeline. Tag tournament, first anniversary tag tournament, semifinals, Dick Togo and Black Buffalo over Monster Zeta Mandora and Monster King Mandora. Super Dolphin and Super Demican over Kishiba Kamen and Ebison. Then we have Naruhiro Shikawa over Yoshida Shikamoto. And then the main event, the final of the tag tournament, Togo and Buffalo over Dolphin and Demican. So there's Osaka Pro there.
By the way, since his name came up, well, as Ebison, there hasn't been any update on Kikutaro since the initial news about his deportation, right?
I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, for those who missed this, his work visa that he had, which was through Lucha Vavoom to work as an international liaison, had expired. He had basically gotten just about everything done to move to Japan. He came back to the States to close out like his lease and put stuff into storage. And when he first got into the country, when he got off his plane for his layover in Hawaii, they apparently claimed that they saw listings of him working on some upcoming show and that he was trying to work illegally and booted him and wouldn't let him go back to Vegas. So hopefully we get an update soon on that.
Yeah. Arcian. They ran Ueda Citizen Gym on May 2nd. Linda Starr over Ali Fujita. Ayaka Mano Mariko Yoshida over Michiko Omakai and Bonnie J. Mari Apache over Yumi Fukawa. And the original Red Dragon, Ryotamana Ingami, over Aja Kong and Akano.
Yes. Now, though theirs is also one word, it is capital R, lowercase e, capital D, lowercase, rest of dragon.
Well, that's as how the Ring of Honor guys
do. No. The Ring of Honor guys are lowercase r, lowercase e, capital D, R, lowercase, rest of dragon.
Okay. Well, I always did
which is allegedly a shot at Davey Richards or something. And that's why it's the DR that's capitalized.
Well, I always spelled it out that way. That's
well, then there was wasn't there also a team, an Arcian that was like Red Drug or Redrug or something?
Something. Gaia, April 29th for the second IMP Hall, 850 fans. Mako Sonomura over Saka Taguchi. Shio Yamada over Sakura Rota. Jigusa Nagaya and Toshi Yamatsu over Shikayo Nagashima and Rie. Del Masami, Akira Hokuto, Mayumi Ozaki over Linus Asuka, Aja Kong, and Karu. In the main event.
Not the strongest card they put on in this era, but one of the very best promotions in the world at the time.
JD, on their show at Corken Hall on April 29th, after Linus Asuka retained her TWF title beating The Bloody, owner of the promotion, she said she was giving Asuka full power to run the company. Asuka said, basically, the younger wrestlers in the
company. No, I think you're reading that wrong. I don't think it's saying Bloody is the owner of the company.
Okay. Well, the owner of the promotion said she was giving up Asuka full power to run the company. Asuka said basically that the younger wrestlers in the group haven't improved enough and she has no strong challenges for a title. I'm blaming it on their coach, Jaguar Yokota. She said the younger wrestlers don't improve, she would break up the promotion. This led to Yokota coming out and defending younger wrestlers, which apparently would be set up a coming out of retirement angle.
Doesn't this also lead indirectly to the actresses?
Yes. And LOPW. They ran Oda Ward Community Plaza in Tokyo May 1st. Sayuri Okuno over Aya Kuyama. Carol Midori and Sharsha Shuya over Shinobu Kandori and Keiko Aono. Rumi Kazama over Nero and Tateno. And Igo Sawai and Takako Inoue over Harley Saito and Mizuki Endo. So there we go. There's Japan. All right, well, since this is part two, we're going to go ahead and cover all the international stuff.
Yeah, there wasn't that much, actually, for Japan without Pride. So,
let's go to Canada now. We start with the Extreme Canadian Championship Wrestling at Eagles Hall in New Westminster, British Columbia, April 28th. We have Leatherface and Jason the Terrible teaming up over Michelle Starr and Johnny Canuck. Dr. Luther over Juggernaut. Canadian Junior Heavyweight title match. Tony Kozina retained over Rockford 2001, which I hope was somebody doing the Jim Rockford gimmick in 2000. Thank you. Boy, you were on the ball.
This is Jim Rockford. At the tone, leave your name and message. I'll get back to you.
You are full of bullshit, my friend. I will sue you for everything you have.
Oh, wait, no, this is someone making a little parody video, but it's labeled as Rockford Files theme.
It still works.
Well. Oh, wait, I went too far.
One of the best theme songs of the 70s, theme for the Rockford Files.
I forget, who composed that? Oh, it's Mike Post. The second.
Who else?
Well, the second result is for the 45, for a vinyl rip. Now, do you know what the syndication title was for Rockford Files during the era where everything had a different syndication title?
No.
Jim Rockford Private Eye.
Yeah, I've never seen it with that.
So. Well, I mean, that stuff, I think, predates us for the most part. But, you know, for people who have ever wondered why so many people call The Andy Griffith Show Andy of Mayberry, that's why. Andy of Mayberry was the syndication title originally.
Kurgan beat Dr. Luther next. Moondog Manson over Lady's Choice. Buffy over The Count. And Disco Fury and Torch over Chance Beckett and Havoc. I kind of think this order may be in reverse. But anyway.
Maybe, yes. And ECCW still exists. Now it stands for Elite Canadian Championship Wrestling, right?
Yeah, sounds right. Mexico. CMLL, Arena Mexico, April 28th. Fidoso and Olympus over Alan Cross and Ellen Stone and Motocross. Cristo, his brother. Io de Gladiador and Rico Latino over Safari and Tony Rivera. Emilio Tales Jr., Negro Casas and Jorge Disco Jr. over Rebe Cañero, Otto Guerrero and Universo 2000 by disqualification. Atlantis, Paraguayo and Villano Tercero over Mascara Año 2000, Perov and Shocker. And in our main event, Atifaz, Del Norte, Mr. Niebla, and Tarzan Boy over Los Guapos members Bestia Safaje, Scorpio Jr., and Zumbi Zumbirovsky.
So we're early enough in 2000 that we haven't even started the Tarzan Boy and in the Infernales storyline yet.
Oh, no. Not yet. May 1st, Rina Calceo, Pegaso and Sombra de Plata over Masada and Príncipe Negro. Mano Negro Jr., Olympus and Ricky Marvin over Alan Stone and Fierro Motocross for disqualification. Dr. O'Borman Jr., the future Dr. X, Mascara Magica and Solar over Carlos Fogarty Jr., Mr. Mexico and Virus by disqualification. That's a nice match. Black Warrior Jr., Dr. Wyden Jr., and Perov over Blazo de Plata, Olympico, and Rigo Mendoza. And then Caballero, Coach Caballero, Brazo de Oro of Valentin Mayo in the main event.
It's always fascinating to see, like, the Sunday shows that Ringo is on, and only those shows.
Well, this is a special Monday show.
Oh, I misread that, actually.
Yeah.
But still, you get what I'm saying. Like, he's only, after a certain point, it seems like, booked on, like, those
Calceo
shows.
Do you know why this is a special show in Ringo Calceo on May 1st?
I'm trying to remember. I feel like I should know this.
This is one of the holidays that they don't really talk about as much. This is the Dia de Trabajo, Labor Day.
Okay.
Sir Labor Day, so it's not as big as Dia de los Niños, Dia de la Independencia, stuff like that, or Dia de los Muertos, but yeah, it's the Labor Day show.
I forget, what's the holiday that's like informally the Santo holiday?
The Santo holiday?
Because isn't there a holiday that's like informally also like a holiday in honor of Santo?
I mean, they do have All Saints Day, which is the day after Dia de los Muertos. I don't know, that's what you're talking about.
Okay. I feel I know this somewhere, but I'm
kind of blanking on that, though.
You remember that it's a thing, just not which holiday it is.
It's not a holiday. It's just something that wrestlers do, basically, and stuff like that.
But I think it's timed to an actual holiday, is what I'm saying. Even though the actual holiday is not an honor.
I mean, they usually do it for his death. That's the thing they do is, you know, the day of his death. They have a big thing, you know, a big ceremony or something like that, right. You know. which would be February the 5th. So, yeah. All right, IWRG and Rin Nakapon on May 4th. Slayer, not the group, over Genki Horiguchi. Ryo Saito and Sky Day over Colt and Susumu Mochizuki. Put up the Morgan over Octagon Cito, original WWE Minis title. Darkness Cerebro, Mega and Super Mega over Fantasy, Starboy, and Ultimo Vampiro. And then Mr. Diablo, Villano Cuatro, Villano Cinco over Rey Bergriñero, El Satanico, and Ultimo Guerrero.
What a great promotion this was at this time.
And if I'm not mistaken, this was the first IWRG show available on Alfredo's old website.
Well, at that point, he wasn't getting the full TV shows yet.
Well, this was on the first Monterey IWRG comp.
Right.
So, I'm checking now to be
sure. The only thing that I remember that was definitely on there was one or two of the Santo Panther matches from Monterey. All right,
let me see. IWRG. Or maybe I should do classic.
You're looking through your own list?
I'm looking for the Alfredo's list.
I mean, I was gonna pull up his site on Wayback.
Or maybe Monterey. That might be the way to go. Okay, no. Alright. See, the version I'm looking at is from 2002, so maybe I need to go 2001.
Oh, you weren't pulling up the... You wanted to look at the original tape listings. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't slambamjam.com at the time.
I know. I'm a WrestleHolics.
Okay.
There it is. IWG Monterey. It's on an older version of it. Mm-hmm. IWG Monterey Volume 1. Yes. Genki Horiguchi against Slayer. And the Infernalis versus Villano Smith Diablo. That was the first stuff on that... Then you had Santo and Panther for Monterey, and then the May 11th IWRG show.
Yeah, it was sometime in 2001 that he started getting the full shows consistently.
Yeah, that has Horiguchi and Haleen on the May 11th, and Ultimo Vampiro and Dr. Cerebro, and yeah. Good shit. Used to love getting that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, Monterey! Triple A Day TV at Arena Solidaridad on April 30th. We had a dark match featuring Cuerno de Chivo and two unknown partners over Atrio and Los Emanajes 1 and 2. La Parquita, Masquerida Sagrada 2000 and Octagoncito over Espiritrito, Mini Abismo Negro and Rocky Marvin. And if you want to watch these matches, they were uploaded by me on my YouTube channel. As it's noted here on Cuz Fans website. Oscar Sevilla over Angel Mortal, Caballero contra Caballero.
Oh, that sounds like a hell of a match.
Oh, that was fun. Charlie Manson, Espiritu, Nigma, and Picudo. Los Vatos Locos over Los Vipers, Hysteria, Maniaco, Máscara de la Merced, and Psicosis 2. Etta Garza over Sangre Chicana to win the Mexican National Heavyweight title. And Alebrije, Hector, La Barca Jr., and The Panther over Abismo Negro, Cibernético, Electroshock, and Pentagon 2 in your main event. Then across town, Arena Coliseo Monterrey, only two matches listed. Cota Kung Lee, Máscara de la Merced, the original, Salsero, Super Calo, over Charles Lucero, Daya Negra, Demencia, and Diluvio Negro 1. And then our main event, Classic Monterrey type match, Antifaz del Norte, Ile de Lismarck, La Parca, and Super Parca, over Arandu, Blue Panther, Damian CCC, and Pepinera Escalada.
I mean, really, nothing says 2000 Monterrey quite like an Atomico's made up of CMLL guys, the Parkas, Antifaz, and Pimpinella. I mean, that's like the blueprint.
Pimpinella was still with CMLL at this time, too, in a way.
But being pushed much more heavily in Monterrey.
Yeah, Arandu was a local. Of course, right. Blue Panther, it's what he is. Damian's a Tijuana guy. Then you got Mainly. Then you got the Parkas, who they're indie guys, and Antifaz and Mark, who are CMLL guys. So, yeah, total mix bag.
Yes.
Toriyama Mexico, they ran a show to Rin Nakapon on May 3rd. Arakan, Kenichi Arai, or no, excuse me, that was not, over Naruki Dwa. Ryo Saito over Takayuri Mori. Yoshishi Kanda over a guy named Akihito Teri. You may know him as well on the Collection AT.
I believe that's a typo, and it was Teyuri.
Teyuri, yeah. Genki Horiguchi over Takuya Murakami. Suzuma Mochizuki over Mochizuku Shimizu. Kenichi Arai, Suzuma Mochizuki and Shishikanda over Genki Horiguchi, Ryo Saito, and Stalker Chikawa. And in your main event, Atlantis, Dragon Kid, Ryo Delisco Jr., and Rayman over Crazy Max Tsushima, Sumo Dandy Fuji, Taru, and Biano Tercero.
Well, it's Sumo Dandy Fuji 2000.
Well, yeah.
Boy, that doesn't read like Uncle Ryo was forced onto them at all, does it?
Well, you know, I mean, you got Rayman there as well, which is he's
oh, so wait a second. This is before he's on. This is before he's on an Arena Mexico TV or anything.
Yeah, he's Rayman here. Yeah,
interesting.
So this is before he's Rey Tatito.
Yes. So okay. So the names that at least aren't in Japan yet, or you know, will get new gimmicks. I don't remember who Arakan is, do you?
That's what they call Kenichi Arai, which is, I mean, that's what kind of was...
Oh, that is Kenichi Arai. Okay, yeah, it is Kenichi Arai.
Yeah, but he's working another match.
But it wasn't a mask gimmick or anything, right? It was just his name in Mexico. Okay, yeah. Okay, that threw me off, too.
But I guess he is doing double duty. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. So Takayuki Mori, of course, is Anthony W. Mori. Like we said, Akihito Tayuri is... Milano Collection AT. I believe later on he would just be billed as Tayuri before he got the Milano gimmick. Who's Takuya Murakami?
I don't remember him looking anything. I think he was just one of the students that kind of was there. I mean, oh, he was he went to Michinoku Pro. That's right. He became Manabu Murakami.
Okay. Is that on wrestling data? Because he doesn't have a cage match profile.
That's him, though.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think. But no, it can't be right. Because he was in a later class. Yeah.
What class is he in?
He was in X.
Yeah, well... Wait, Mori was T2P, right?
It can't be him, I don't think, because he was 16 here. But it could be. Because he's listed in the sixth term. He's with the T2T project. He's in the same class as Milano.
Hmm.
Shimizu, of course, would bounce around. He would go to all those different groups.
Yes.
But yeah. I mean, it could have been Manabu Murakami at 16 years old. I don't know.
Maybe. So. But I mean, if they're already working shows, he'd be listed as a graduate. So
somebody will correct us.
Okay.
K-Slow, I'm looking at you. All right, IWA Puerto Rico. IWA in Ponce on April 28th was headlined by Rock and Kane over the Dudleys. And also featured other performers such as Val Venus, Cesar Rios, and Lita, as well as their contracted performers who are working as regulars for the promotion, like Steve Bradley, Tiger Ali Singh, and Agate Silva. Drew about 7,000 fans, paying an assist of $170,000. Rot was over as you expected him to be over. When the match is over, Paul Bearer, Rot, Kane, and special referee Safia Vega all delivered people's elbows to the Dudleys. For protection, because Puerto Rico's history of being dangerous, they put the main event on in the middle of the show. The crowd got dangerous late in the show after Singh's match with Val Venus. Ricky Santana's valet, Havana, ended up exposing her breast early in the show. Also, Miguel Perez and Hiroki Castillo Jr. lost their IWA tag titles to Cheeky Star and Victor the Bodyguard, who just jumped from WWE.
I like how you almost called him Vicky the Bodyguard.
The numbers were disappointing, believed to be because Ponce doesn't have good cable clearance compared to the rest of the island, so W penetration wasn't strong. The company's doing between 400 and 600 fans per show, which is the profitable local crew, all on weekly salary. And it's clear unless they get the big stars of WWE to headline more frequently, they aren't going to be able to survive in the long haul.
Well, thankfully for them, eventually Mr. Ratings shows up.
Full results of this show. Esther Rios and Lita over Sean Hall and Andres Borges. Jesus Cristobal, not Tarzan Boy, over Fidel Sierra. Payne over Giant Silva. Nuevo Gran Apollo over Andy Anderson. Gun War Shane and Ricky Santana. Then the tag title match. Ricky Banderas over Steve Bradley in a submission rules match. Tiger Lee Singh over Val Venus and Rocky Kane over the Dudleys.
You know what's interesting, actually, about this?
What?
That 11 months before there's no more WCW, Steve Bradley is already the one developmental guy in Puerto Rico, basically.
Mm-hmm.
to me, that suggests things might be a little different than the established narrative, you know?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't the way we always kind of heard it, that they sent him to Puerto Rico once they just had nothing for him after RVD comes in?
Yeah,
but he already is in Puerto Rico in 2000.
Yeah, he already had worked there.
So, I don't know. It makes you wonder, like, when really did opinions on him change? Or was it something that was never going to get through to Vince, or what?
I don't know.
And, I mean, the other thing, too, which comes up with this, of course, is did Angle try to speak up for him? And if not, why?
Who knows?
I mean, you would think the guy who Kurt Angle credits with training him and teaching him how to work and all that would be a position that would keep you safe.
I have no answer to your question. All right, WWC and new WWC in the WWC, a tag team called Thunder and Lightning. They aren't the former WCW tag team, the same name. One member of that team is Jeff Farmer, who's now Super Japanese fan. The other is no longer wrestling. These two are students of Isaac Rosario, Puerto Rico, made their pro debuts a few weeks ago as faces and are managed by Joe Don Smith in a face manager role and are police officers as a regular job. Why they wore masks. And they won the tag titles from Dutch Mantel and Bouncer Bruno on April 29th in Carolina. Public Enemy's headed back to WC this week, getting the win themselves so in. Eddie Guerrero's childhood friend Arturo Flores from Juarez, who's working with WCW as the LWO bodyguard, he worked this past month under the name of Chato Guerrero.
And that, of course, would be Spider.
Yes. Results of the show drew 2,000 fans. Bouncer Bob over Black Boy.
What a name.
Milo Hetes over Richard Santiago. Puerto Rican title. Titan over Chato Guerrero. Universal title. Rick Gonzalez with the double count out with Carlos Colon. Carly Colon with WDQ with Jose Herrera Jr. WC Jr. title. El Exotico over El Roquero. El Bronco over Invader 1. And then Thunder and Lightning over Dutch and Bruno to win the tag titles.
And for those of you who have never seen Thunder and Lightning, at least for the first several years, they're wearing Kane outfits with blue instead of red.
Yes. Now, you may think reading this that IWA seems like the hotter group. It's got the WWF talent, it's got the bug, you know, you got hot young wrestlers there.
Well, night to night, they're not drawing as well, though.
They're not doing on TV either. Latest ratings on the 29th saw WWC draw a 9.6 rating and a 38 share, while IWA drew a 6.1 and a 23 share. They aren't head to head. WWC runs 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and IWA from 1 to 2. On April 30th, each group runs the same time slot as the day before, with WWC drawing a 10.7 and 36 share, and IWA drawing a 6.2 and a 19 share. Well, there you go. That tells a story.
Yeah, and goes to what I said earlier. Ray Gonzalez, man.
A lot of ways.
Let me ask you this. Do you think his influence and his near, singularity as a draw in this era, do you think he should at least be on the Hall of Fame ballot?
He won't get in.
But do you think he should at least be on the ballot?
Well, yeah, but he won't get in. I mean, it's basically a question of, should he be on the ballot and just get nothing? Or should he just not be on the ballot and, you know, not to worry about that happening to him?
Well, there's also a very clear mentality of, okay, we need to get Carlos in, now what? With all that.
I mean...
Even though there are other people from that territory who are worthy of the Hall of Fame as draws, but some of them aren't ever going to be on the ballot because one of them is Jose Gonzalez.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it. It's not even worth talking about. Because with that Hall of Fame and the people that are now currently voting in it, it's never going to happen.
Right. No one's ever voting for Ray Gonzalez. Maybe put Ray Phoenix in parentheses and try to trick people into voting for him.
Well, that might be better. But anyway. All right. That's it for us for this. We're going to have a halftime segment between these two segments. So we'll play some great 2000 commercials. We'll come back. We'll talk about Patreon. We got the new Patreon show to talk about. We'll talk about IWTV, play the Amazon game. Then we'll come back and we'll close out this part with the rest of North America, including a lot of ECW insanity and TNN. Some of this might be familiar to some of you. And Jason has a bad night in Poughkeepsie. And all kinds of other indie news and notes, including Joe Pedicino starting up his little wrestling group. All that and more after the break.
Seventh Heaven is brought to you in part by Universal Orlando.
You haven't really experienced Orlando until you've experienced Universal Studios, where you're the star of all your favorite movies. Join the Men in Black and save the universe in Universal's all-new Men in Black Alien Attack ride. Enter the spectacular 3D cyber adventure Terminator 2 3D. You've just gotta experience Universal Studios, one of two awesome theme parks at Universal Orlando. Two parks, 2 days, one great vacation.
Car makers have always promised to set you free. Finally, there's one that actually does. Set me free. Because every car Hyundai builds comes with the freedom of America's best warranty, which means you're free from worrying about your new Tiburon for the next 10 years. All you gotta do is set me free.
Oh, set me free. Get this. Clear skin from a makeup. Neutrogena Skin Clearing Makeup. Dermatologist developed with a blemish fighter that clears up your skin. Natural looking coverage makes it beautiful. And shine? No way. Neutrogena Skin Clearing Makeup. It's beautiful. It's beneficial. It's Neutrogena.
iZone Pocket Camera and Sticky Film from Polaroid.
I've got rhythm, I've got music, I've got my man who could ask for anything more.
Do you have a Visa card?
Huh?
If you want to see Broadway's best, bring your Visa card, because it's the only card accepted at the Tony Awards. Visa is everywhere you want to be.
Felicity needs time away from Ben Covington. And to make this romantic weekend even more special...
I hear there's a madman out there in the forest.
...an unexpected visitor.
I'm gonna come home. This is stupid.
Don't tell your lover.
What are you doing here?
I came here to tell you something.
An all-new Felicity on the WB Wednesday night.
All right, we're back. Hope you enjoyed those great 2000 commercials. As we pivot to the halftime segment of the show, we will begin to talk about our Patreon... And yes, we do have a new Patreon show up at patreon.com/betweentheSheets. And you guys have heard me talk about this new show a lot. I'm going to let Bix talk about it. So, Bix, I want you to tell everybody your thoughts on the show and why they need to put down their $5 a month to listen to this.
So, part one, I think, of these two Sale of WCW shows... I think it would be fair to say that part one, in a sense, is more about kind of the slow impending sense of dread and also the massive differences between what Wade Keller and Jason Powell are reporting from what Dave Meltzer's reporting.
Yes, I would agree with that. It's the setup for what was to come. Yes.
Yes. Whereas part two... I mean, there are other things going on, but since it's over a more compressed period of time, over 5 weeks, among other things, I think it's two stories. The kind of side story is just how fucked over the WCW office employees were in the whole scenario. But the main one is that, as becomes clear between what we see in the newsletters, what we see in the trades, and then what... was not in the notes as we're recording that you find from on Google from other trade publications. And we mix all that up with the aforementioned stuff and some of the stuff in Guy Evans' Nitro book. And we come to realize that Jamie Kellner was pretty much set up to be put into position to cancel WCW so he could be scapegoated for it. And to hear the details, $5 or more a month at patreon.com/betweentheSheets.
And something that we didn't bring up on the show because you didn't find this out until later. Steve Heyer, who is a pivotal figure in all this in a way.
He's the one who was negotiating the fusion deal.
Yes. And we talked about him. Tell everybody what you found out about Steven Heyer.
One of his jobs before Turner Broadcasting was that he spent 15 years as a high-level executive, I forget the exact title, at Booz Allen Hamilton, a.k.a. the quote-unquote consulting firm that Edward Snowden was working for when he blew the whistle. So, yes, after the fact, our additional question is, wait, was the guy who was negotiating the fusion deal for Turner a spy? Like, a literal spy?
Could have been. You never know.
I mean, as people will hear when they listen to the show, seems like he did have some good trade craft for setting people up.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's an amazing show.
Oh, and don't forget also that Jamie Kellner is in the middle of the Buffy negotiations at the time, and Joss Whedon was burying him by name in Entertainment Weekly, like, the day before the cancellation announcement.
Exactly, and there's a lot. I mean, Kellner ultimately made the call, as true, but
yes.
there's so much that went into play that it's not as black and white as it's been reported. So
not nearly as black and white as it's been reported.
There's all kinds of other stuff involved, and other personalities involved who had influence, and yeah, it's an interesting show. Just everything put together.
Yeah.
You're not gonna get this information all together like you get here.
No, and I mean also too, like something to stress as far as like the conclusions we end up drawing for this. One of the things that really puts it together is something that Brian Bedall said to Guy Evans. The fusion head. So like it's not like this is all coming from one side or anything.
No, there's a lot of stuff at play here.
Mm-hmm.
From all sides.
You know,
so,
as we said before, nothing against our regular weekly shows, but because of the format these Patreon shows take, they are our best work. There is so much that does not become apparent until you step, even if you just use the newsletters. There's so much that does not become apparent until you're reading week after week close together on one topic. I mean, this is happening constantly on these shows, but this is another one where it happens. And again, you know, I mean, look at the first ECW on TNN show we did and what we found and thankfully found during the first show about ECW Management Group and how that, you know, changed our point of view for the rest of the series. Like, if you haven't listened, these are our best shows. You know, there are a few that we've put, you know, months after the fact up for free on the regular free feed. You can check out ECW on TNN Part 1. What did we call the Sid one? Rise and Fall of Sid Justice?
Yeah.
You know, covering his departure from WCW originally through his first WWF departure. The Herb Abrams Mega Mix, combining both of those Patreon shows, and also the first one we put up was our first GWF show, which is really, I would say, the first of the Patreon shows that's really like our gears are turning in real time. I mean, there's an addendum at the end after we do our sign off.
Yeah, and considering that these shows are pay, they should be the best shows. Where you're paying for content,
well,
and
yes,
that should be better than free content. So that's the way it should be. But $5 a month allows you access to those shows and everything else that's in the archive. $1 a month allows you access to the Discord and thanks in this segment, which we'll do in just a minute. $25 allows you to pick a show for the week. Now make sure you pick a show that we haven't done already. If you do pick a show we've done, make sure you have backup choice. And always have backup choice handy because somebody may pick the week that you want it. So always be prepared in that way. 10-year rule on that. Nothing 2011 and further from the week that you pick, or 2012 and further if you pick anyone for 2022.
Yes. I just realized one we should also mention, because we've mentioned it as far as our show rules, like for how we pick weeks, but not necessarily for Patreon. If you want something that's MMA related, we're not doing any MMA after the Ultimate Fighter launches.
Okay.
I mean, because we've already, we had already made that decision for ourselves, but we don't usually mention it in the Patreon discussions. And someone did mention some like post Tough Boom UFC stuff. So I'm in a recent request. So I wanted to stress that.
Well, there it is. Yeah. So no MMA past Ultimate Fighter.
So yes. Now, like, obviously, yeah, if you want, like, Vince making the decision to put Ultimate Fighter on and, you know, something like that, that's fine. But, like, if you... we're not going to, like, get into, like, the adventures of Sam Hoger or anything.
I mean, that could come up on a main show if a week comes up. You know, that's a... maybe that'd be the way to get it, but not on a Patreon-requested show.
You mean a regular show that we do ourselves?
Yeah, if it just happens to fall that way.
Right, and if there's room or whatever. It depends on what it is. But by and large, also just because it blows up the size of the shows, we kind of, you know, with how in-depth Dave gets in that era.
Yeah, the newsletters are way more in-depth as the 2000s go along, believe me.
Yes.
A lot more in-depth.
I mean, that's actually more than any... well, that and that it's more divorced from pro wrestling... but, I mean, that's one of the main reasons why we preferred to not do anything from the launch of Tough On for MMA.
I can get this information 30 days or before that, for sure, and follow the Patreon protocol at patreon.com/20sheets to get this information to Bix. So there's that. $50 a month allows you to send in for a segment of that show if you choose, and $100 for the whole show if you choose at patreon.com/betweentheSheets. And who we have to thank this week is our new and or returning patrons.
All right. We've got a bunch. We've got Michael.
I hope so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we hit our record this week. And then
it's good.
We had what seems like less drop offs from billing stuff or whatever on the first than usual as well, which was nice to see. So anyway, I'd like to start with Michael Spielman.
Thanks, Michael.
Anthony Tamburano.
Thanks, Anthony.
Mr. Sinestro.
Thanks, Mr. Sinestro.
Michael Owens.
Thanks, Michael.
Brian Kennedy.
Thanks, Brian Kennedy.
Nick Moore.
Thanks, Nick.
J. Aaron Poole.
Thanks, J. Aaron.
25 from Sean Doherty, who emailed me a pick that I actually need to talk to you about later, but thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Jeff Duncan.
Thanks, Jeff.
Dustin Bailey.
And it's real quick. He's G-E-O-F-F, correct?
No, J-E-F-F.
Okay, that's another Jeff I'm thinking about then. Well, thank you, Jeff.
Where was I? Dustin Bailey.
Thanks, Dustin.
This name sounds really familiar and I can't place it. Chris Calamita?
Yeah, I've known that name. Yeah, thanks, Chris. I've heard of that name.
Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
Jordan Smith.
Thanks, Jordan.
Oh, God, I forgot that I was scrolled down. There are a bunch more. Christina L. Burke.
Thanks, Christina. Always good to have the ladies on board.
Yes, and she's someone I think interacts with us sometimes on Twitter because mm-hmm. I recognize the name. But always good to diversify the listenership, yes. Big J. Sampson, of course.
Thanks, Big J. Sampson. Name mentioned a few times in this segment.
SC Flyer 51.
Thanks, SC Flyer 51.
Wrestling Scoopster Warren Hayes.
Thanks, Wrestling Scoopster Warren Hayes.
I mean, that's me calling him a Wrestling Scoopster.
That's not Warren Haynes. That'd be an even better pull. Warren Haynes, the lead singer Government Mule, plays with Allman Brothers. Great musician.
Yeah. Jared Hunt.
Thanks, Jared. It could only be Jared.
Nick Crow, presumably no relation to the puppet from Mystery Science Theater.
Thanks, Nick Crow.
William Lanham, of course.
Thanks, William.
Lee Ann.
Thanks, Lee Ann.
L-E-E space A-N-N, which... wait, how does Leanne Rhyme spell it?
She's L-E capital A-N-N.
Okay. As one word, though, no space.
Mm-hmm, no space.
Okay. The modern day Mataraz.
The modern day what?
Mataraz.
Thanks, modern day Mataraz.
Simon Mulvaney.
Thanks, Simon.
Which might be the most British name we've ever had for a patron.
kind of, I would say it's kind of more of an Irish, you know, the Mulvaney part.
Well, but... okay, perhaps, but still.
Thanks, Simon.
Brendan.
Thanks, Brendan.
Mark Bright.
Thanks, Mark Bright.
And I'm curious if this is a real name, for reasons that you'll figure out immediately. Douglas Hinckley.
Thanks, Doug Hinckley. So is that all of them?
That's all of them. All now, right. You understand the way I think Doug Hinckley might not be a real name.
Whatever.
Because it rhymes with Doug Brinkley, but then adds a notorious.
Well, it's a person.
Assassin.
So anyway, thank all of you new patrons. Thank all you old patrons that's been there from the beginning, come along the way and such. We thank everyone for supporting us at patreon.com/betweentheSheets. All right. IWTV and yeah, there's some more wild side that's come up. AIW had a hell of a weekend, including Dominic Green versus Eddie Kingston, which I haven't seen that yet. But
It was fantastic. You need to watch that. It
sounded like a humdinger. Of course, Dom being the guest on this show this week, so everybody go watch him. John was on last week. So everybody support AIW, watch their shows, please.
Yes.
So, and more wild side's gone up, but Bix, what else has caught your eye on IWTV this week?
So I saw parts of, I didn't get to watch everything I missed yet from the AIW shows, but they're both well worth checking out, especially Dom and Kingston. I was not spoiled. I had a feeling that the guy he mentioned that you'd think would never return to AIW would probably be Kingston because of, like, the core, you know, non-homegrown guys. He's, you know, he was the only one that was signed, didn't have a farewell, and theoretically could work a shot. You know what I mean? Janela had the farewell, Tracy Williams contractually couldn't do it, etc. That said,
we're stepping over the big story, though.
What?
They put Mats Warner against Wildfire Tommy Rich.
Well, yes, they did, which then turned into, after Duke interfered, Wildfire Tommy Rich, Mats Warner, and PME against the entire Duke Money stable.
Fantastic.
And he came out to the FBI Stayin' Alive cover.
There's no other way.
Well, especially in AIW.
Yeah.
So that was a hoot as well. Trying to think what else of note. The main event, tag team from up here in the Northeast, who I had seen more when they were doing like a circus gimmick, but I was always pretty impressed by. They debuted and looked good. You know, have various other returns. Allison Kay worked one of the shows. So, well worth checking those out. The action show or shows, I forget if it was a doubleheader or not, that you went to or up on demand now.
It was one show.
Okay. He's done so many doubleheaders, you know.
Well, that's the next one.
Well, yes.
May 14th, I think, is the live doubleheader coming up. Where
the one with Dom and Eric Royal, yes.
Dom and Eric Royal, yes.
A rematch almost 4 years in the making from SCI 2017.
Oh.
Yes. Where Eric damn near killed him with the pounce as the finish.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So, like you said, Wildside, another, I believe, 5 TV shows covering through the October 20th, 2001 show through November 17th, 2001. Just clicking on, oh, okay, because I was starting to get the TV by this point. One of the matches listed on November 17th show is Jason Cross, AJ Styles. And I believe it's like that AJ Styles, Jason Cross match, because I remember there's one from this period that's particularly spectacular. And as much as there's a lot of good stuff up from Wildside, if people just want to get a taste of one match to kind of get them started before going in order, I think that's the match I'd recommend.
Yes.
You remember the one I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
I think there's a little bit of a fuck finish with Cross going over too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that match is, pun not intended, phenomenal. I mean, the thing with Jason Cross is, like, he's a better athlete than AJ Styles.
At least back then he was.
Well, he was, yes. But watch that match and you will get all of the Jason Cross hype. Trust me. But plenty of that up. More archival CCW went up as well from 03. Several shows worth, looks like about half a dozen, maybe more. The last one of those being Uprising from October 11th, 03, which, again, this is when they're starting to diversify more. So you have everything from Mercedes Martinez versus Summer to John Dahmer versus DJ Hyde to Jimmy Ray versus Tony Mameluke to Homicide versus B-Boy to a dog collar match between Nick Cage and Nate Hatchard as the main event. So with SoCal guys coming in and all that, I'm guessing this is around when Mike Burns started to get booking influence.
Probably.
So a lot of interesting stuff there worth checking out. Like I said, yes, both of the AIW shows are up on demand. And oh, and I have not watched this yet, but the documentary and now their The Life Of series, I think the one on the former Dasher Hatfield, A Very Good Professional Wrestler, I think is the same series. They also have one that just got put up this weekend about Jeff Cannonball as well. So
that's something we have not talked about in this show because our dear friend John Filipavage is part of that.
Oh, I don't think I even realized that.
Yeah, I think he's part of the production on that. So,
well, I would think so on the Very Good Professional Wrestler one because live in the same basic area as John.
So yeah, I'm pretty sure he's involved in that. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Everybody go check all this stuff out that we talked about on IWTV, and the coupon code is, of course,
BTSPOD. Put that code in at independentwrestling.tv. I believe right now there's still no free trial or anything while we're still less than a month removed from all their Mania Weekend shows, but it'll still support us if you keep your account going. So that's coupon code BTSPOD.
All right. Amazon Game is suspended this week. Keyword suspended. The website.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice of words. We're having issues with it right now.
The website's down for us for reasons which we can't get into on the air. So hopefully I'll be back next week on the show.
Yes. It's a good thing that I already set up a referral for something else, even in advance of having this issue.
So anyway, we'll have more on that next week. All right. Plug time. Yes, Exxon Bash Street, I will be
recording. No, you skipped over what I was about to go to, though. We talked about this before we started. Viper VPN.
I also saved that.
Oh, okay. Fine.
So, I want to close with that. All right, so plug time. Exxon Bash Street will be recorded this week for the Wild Side, Nick's Wild Side show. So, be on the lookout for that. And I got to watch them whilst I get caught up. I've been busy lately. Got completely caught up yet, but the notes for the show have come together really nicely so far. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. So be ready for that. Next week's Between the Sheets. If you listen to the end of part one of this show, I hadn't done the notes as of yet because I had just completely forgot about it. I was on vacation. I've done the notes since then. And I'm still not telling anybody what the show is. Only one person knows, and that's the guest. So Bix doesn't even know.
I mean, I could look if I wanted to, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, he knows who the guest is, but he doesn't know what the show is going to be. But all I can tell you is this. We got some great clips next week, folks. We got some great clips next week, believe me. So it's going to be a really, really fun show. And it's one of, you know, I guess everybody loves as well. So you probably can guess a range of who that is. So yes, should be a hell of a show next week. So be look out for that on Between the Sheets. All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Chris Zellner, KRISZELLNER. Show proper at BT Sheets Pod. Sports account at Old School Sports, OLSKOOL Sports. Bix at David Bix. And Bix, tell everybody about Viper VPN.
I still don't understand why you were waiting after the personal plugs, but see, I would have mentioned how apparently it turns out that I'm ROH performer Danhausen, according to Wrestling Inc. Did you see that?
Yeah.
So which is better, when Scoop said I was a former WWE announcer or this? I think this one's better because it makes even less sense.
David Danhausen. But yes, tell everybody about Viper VPN.
Yeah, so with all the WWE Network shenanigans, I had been in the market for some kind of VPN service. VPN, for those who don't know, stands for Virtual Private Network. It is a service you can use, depending on which provider it is, they might have, you know, desktop and notebook apps, mobile apps, sometimes TV apps, ways to set it up on your router, all sorts of things. And basically, there are two reasons that you would use a VPN. One is privacy, that it helps encrypt your traffic from your ISP, so there's no snooping. And that's especially good in certain countries, of course. And the other thing is getting around region blocks, which is what comes in handy with WWE Network. So I was looking into different ones. First, I even wanted to see if I could get away with using some free ones, but the free ones, you know, they're not necessarily made for streaming and the like, so those are out of the picture. So I'm looking at the different reviews and the different prices, and of the, like, upper-tier ones, I see that the best deal is this company, Viper VPN, V-Y-P-R VPN. And they have a 30-day money-back guarantee, so I'm like, you know what, they have a TV app. I can use it on my Android TV device. They have the 30-day money-back guarantee. I'll know whether or not it works. Perfect. Tried them out. It works great. The speeds are, you know, even on the overseas servers, are more than fine to stream in HD. The speeds on the US ones, where they have multiple servers, if you're just doing it for privacy, is fantastic. Like, I believe what I read is that generally you'll see like a 30% drop off in speed from the fastest servers on a VPN. You don't want it to go higher than that. And not only was this in that range, I only lost 2 seconds on my ping, excuse me, 2 milliseconds on my ping response time. I want to say that it was 6 milliseconds just on my regular gigabit connection, and then 8 for a ping to go back and forth between the server using, whatchamacallit, using Viper VPN. So with that in mind, I was like, okay, I like this. I know that our listeners are probably going to want something like this because, I mean, it's right now it's more useful to especially American wrestling fans than it's ever been. Not to mention that there's other stuff like AEW Plus that people might be interested in that's region locked. So I looked into it. I signed up for their affiliate program. And if you want to check them out and get their various, you know, promotional prices, with the best deal being 3 years for $60, so about $1.67 a month, which is what I went with, go to tinyurl.com/BTSVPN and sign up there. And if you, you know, obviously, unless you cancel before the month is up, we will get a surprisingly healthy commission, and you get the same service that you were looking for anyway at the price you wanted, and everybody wins.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody look at getting into that. If I didn't have Norton VPN, I would be looking at getting into that. So
right, you're on Windows, you have Norton anyway, and that comes with actually a very good VPN. But yeah, you know, if you're on a Mac, if you know, whatever, if you're not a Norton guy, whatever, definitely check out Viper VPN and, you know, use our referral at tinyurl.com/BTSVPN. And, you know, there's more I could even go into, you know, like they have, if you want to use it, it's off by default. They have a feature called Kill Switch if you're using it for privacy, where if the VPN drops, it cuts off your connection so you don't have any privacy issues. There's all sorts of stuff in there. Like, I'm really impressed with it, especially that they can deliver this quality of service for pretty much the lowest price of any notable VPN. So while we're checking that out, Tim Burke, formerly of Deadspin, also highly recommends them. I remember when I mentioned it to him, and I think he said something on Twitter about it too, that like he's never bothered even looking into other VPNs in like the however many years he's been using Viper VPN. And with how much of a tech geek he is with video and his high-speed internet and whatever, that's another endorsement that I would trust. So tinyurl.com/BTSVPN.
For people who know Biggs, let's talk about this. At Bubba Prog on Twitter.
Yes, yes. Also known as the person who wrote the Wikinews article about the Chris Benoit Wikipedia entry edit after all the Benoit stuff.
Everybody check that out. tinyurl.com/BTSVPN.
Yep.
All right. That's it for us. Let's get back to the rest of the show. All right. Let's close out part two with the independent scene in the U.S. here. And let's start with Extreme Championship.
No, I don't think that's the order we were putting it in, was it?
Yeah.
Didn't we know? We did a song. Oh, that's right, because we did. I forgot that we were putting all the Dom stuff together. That's right. I forgot that you said that we decided that. It's been a lot, and obviously we're not done editing yet.
So anyway, to close out part two, let's start with Extreme Championship Wrestling. According to Paul Heyman, TNN brought up the possibility of moving the show from Friday to Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
Which you said he wasn't interested in. Heyman said he figures it's a matter of time before they kicked off TNN, so there's no point in moving it to a new night and having to rebuild an audience. He's been mad about the lack of promotion on the show in the past and said he was miffed because they had a show 2 weeks ago where a WF wrestler wrestled WCW wrestled on their show, and TNN never promoted it as such and tried to get publicity for that episode of the show. On TV this week, as they came back from a commercial, Heyman actually got on the show and lied about how they're sick of the commercials, but TNN needs the money because they have to raise the $100 million paid to WWF. Heyman's going to, under the assumption that a court is going to rule against USA, and at that point, WWF goes to TNN.
Okay. Obviously, there's much more about this in our ECW on TNN series at patreon.com/betweentheSheets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me refresh my memory. When did the video game come out?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I'm looking. The game was the only thing called Hardcore Revolution, right? There was no. It's not like Anarchy Rules, where there was other stuff for WCW Mayhem. Okay, yeah. Okay, it came out in February. The reason I bring this up, because as we discussed on that Patreon show, they had initially been offered a Tuesday night special on Valentine's Day, which would have been 3 days before the game came out.
Mm-hmm.
Which Paul also turned down.
Mm-hmm.
Which is insane, if that's true. So, I still don't know what I make of all this Tuesday night stuff. It would have been so much of a better time slot.
Yeah, it would have been. But Paul's Paul.
Well, yes.
So, he wanted that Friday night slot, I think, more than anything else. And he didn't want to play ball with TNN, so.
Well, yes.
That's the most important thing. He was mentally done.
And generally didn't want to play ball with TNN.
He didn't give a shit, you know?
Yeah.
So, again, if you want to hear more about that, go to patreon.com/betweentheSheets. And we did a lot of that, so there's a lot of audio up on that.
Six parts is the whole series. So this would be, based on the timeline, probably, without me looking, around part three or four?
Yeah, something like that.
So, I mean, yeah, it's hard to discuss this in isolation because there's so much around it. But there's just so much going on here. Like, he's already done so much to piss them off. They've done so much to piss him off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is, by the way, I feel like almost the underrated thing about the series we did, that, like, it's very obvious looking at everything week to week that this was not just TNN's fault.
No. Absolutely not.
It's Paul being Paul.
That's right. All right. The FMW-ECW relationship nearly fell apart this past week. FMW faxed ECW a letter, upset because Mike Awesome wouldn't be appearing on their shows this week as they had advertised. See, now you're getting some stuff that we didn't talk about. In the letter, they threatened legal action, and ECW assumed it meant against them. That, combined with the fact that FMW owes Balls Mahoney either $2,000 to $5,000 for past tours, led to ECW not sending either Mahoney or New Jack to Japan as scheduled this week. FMW started the whole thing, stated the whole thing was a misunderstanding. That they were in the letter threatening legal action against Awesome and WCW. So it's expected that Jack and Balls would appear on the May 5th FMW show, but only that show, bar none of the problem. where that could still fall apart is that when Jack and Mahoney didn't come, FMW and their place brought in Maddie Smalls, and it says here Fatu, Sam Fatu. Really, that's the Addy, who had formerly worked there as Armageddon. They debuted on the May 1st show in Hiroshima. There's a lot of talk that due to playing before generally small crowds, FMW's in bad financial condition right now. Yeah, Dave's got the wrong thought, too. But,
we did talk about this on the Patreon show, I think.
I don't think we did all of this. I love that ECW automatically assumed that it's illegal action is them.
And not just that they were carbon copied on it, right?
Yeah. What can you say? I mean, the relationship fell apart.
I'm curious if FMW's lawyers also had any missing fingers.
That reminds me, which we talk a lot, a lot on this show about the local businessmen and such like that. I just watched the third ever Rings show, April 3rd, 92 Rings show, and they did a shot of the announcers at Big Side. And behind them were just these about five or six dudes, all in suits and ties, and all look like, they definitely had some meat in the game, so to speak. They definitely had the local businessmen look down. It was a Ring show, one of the early Ring shows, the third one. So you know that Maeda was definitely looking for some investors. So,
what are you talking about? The Yakuza had no involvement with professional wrestling, especially shoot-style promotions.
Yeah, they definitely look like guys who would be sitting around their American counterparts would be sitting around a table of, meatball marinara or something like that at some restaurant.
Yes. I mean, something we've learned over the years from doing all these shows, though, is the most open discussion of the Yakuza in the Observer tends to come with stuff related to one of the UWF promotions.
Yes.
Which is interesting. I'm not sure why that is.
Well, shoot style is more of a, macho style wrestling.
Yes, well, and also with the Sayama stuff in the 80s, that was also mainstream news in Japan.
Yeah, men. None of that sissy pro wrestling stuff.
We wrestle in the NWA.
There's nothing new on the Lance Storm situation. He has committed to stay through the pay-per-view, and he's yet to make any decision. WF and WCW has expressed at least some interest, although it is believed that either side is this weekend has made a serious offer. Heyman's offered him an incentive-based contract to stay and promised him a program with Just Incredible for the title. And he started along that direction at TV tapings in Poughkeepsie. Well, we all know what happens here. Now, the tapings in Poughkeepsie on April 29th drew a legitimate sellout of 2,500 fans with virtually no paper. With a weird over Johnny Swinger and bad opener, with Swinger missing a lot of spots. Tommy Dreamer beat Simon Diamond in a decent match. The TNN opening saw Just Incredible interviewed. Lance came out to talk about how he trained Justin in Calgary and how by throwing down the tag titles, he was throwing away their friendship, and they started brawling. This led to Francine, Dawn Marie, and later Jazz getting into it. Raven ended up brawling with Lance, leaving Justin to brawl with Dreamer. It all wound up with Kid Cash and Lance in the ring and Storm winning a singles match. Nova and Chris Chatty over C.W. Anderson and Wild Bill Wiles in a match which saw the Baldies, New Jack, and Chili Witty all end up doing run-ins. During a roadkill, beat Tony DeVito and Angel in a match where Vic Grimes and Balls Mahoney also ended up running in. Just Girl beat Mike Whipwreck in what was described as a 3-star match. Told that Credible's first two title defenses the previous two nights against Jerry Lynn were in the 3.5 to 4-star range and the best ECW title matches from an old-style perspective in years. Lynn beat Scott Anton when a network interfered and the Rhino put Anton to a table. Cyrus tried to get Lynn to join the network, but he blew him off. Van Dam did a run-in after the match and another big die. Tajiri also didn't run in. Carino told him he better rejoin the network because he had nobody to team with him. Tajiri then popped open a beer can and Sandman's music played. Leading to Sandman and Tajiri beating Rhino and Carino in the main event when Tajiri picked Carino after a double foot stump off the top to a table, stacked up on top of Carino. So there's your Poughkeepsie taping. So quite a bit going on here.
Yeah. One of the things that makes me actually take Paul at something close to face value about when he claims that if ECW stuck around, it would have gone in a direction more like what ROH ended up being, is he had been transforming the main event scene and really the whole, the whole roster as far as regulars in a more work-ready direction in the year or so before he closed.
Well, yes. Compared to, you know, 98 and 99.
Yes. Well, yes. And because,
yeah, there were 80 and 98, as far as actual wrestling, is the worst year of the company. 99, there was some hit and miss, but yeah. 2000 was better, even though it was not as name level, talent wise as the other years, but still, I mean, he had some quality wrestling on television a lot of the time.
Yes. It wasn't the promotion that a little, the previous year brought into Jerry and Crazy to work with each other endlessly because the level of wrestling on the shows was so bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it was far from that. Now, speaking of super crazy, he had the weekend off visiting family in Mexico. So there you go. Vic Grimes is back after his honeymoon. I can only imagine how that went. I wonder if he jumped off a balcony. And then there's this story. This is from The Torch. ECW on-air manager Jason Knight turned himself in on a 4-year-old bench warrant in Middletown, Connecticut. The 35-year-old Jason was arrested 5 years ago in the Waltco, Connecticut. In the Waltco, Connecticut. Come on, Wade. In Waltco.
Cameraman, zoom.
For driving while intoxicated, a misdemeanor charge. Police say he jumped bail after the arrest and now faces a second misdemeanor charge for doing so. The Middletown Times Herald Record reported that after missing the TV taping for the kit scene, ECW officials told Jason to turn himself in. Paper went on to say that Jason brought Justin Credible with him when he turned himself in to police, but ECW sources told the Torch that it's inaccurate, and Jason's bail was set at $500 and he will appear in court on May the 10th. 10 policemen entered the locker room in Poughkeepsie to search for Jason. 10. While backstage, the police questioned Johnny Swinger because of his resemblance to Jason. Huh? Swinger provided identification to police, but they asked him to produce a second form. Police questioned Simon Diamond at autograph session in Connecticut because he fit their description of Jason.
Oh, boy.
ECW has not fired Jason yet, but his common knowledge of the locker room and his status is up in the air. Johnny Swinger, Simon Diamond, Jason... doppelgangers, huh? I can't see that, but...
Wait, were maybe one of them checking out wrestlers' dicks in the shower then and telling female fans about it, as was alleged potentially by Raven?
Well, Simon was known for having big dicks around with him, so...
Big vascular dicks.
Yeah. Did you see the picture of Jason that was out recently from the shooting interview I think he did with Feinstein or something like that?
No, I did not.
It doesn't even look like Jason. He's 35 here. So this is 21 years ago. So he's like 56 now. And he kind of looks like Paul Sr. from America Chopper. He's got like a gray mustache and shit. He does not look like Jason. He does not look like him at all.
Had he never done a shoot interview before?
I've never seen one with...
So, is this the one from 2014 or something newer?
No, this is new. This is something new.
Okay, so if I go to the RF YouTube, it should be there?
I mean, I saw a picture of it. Rover tweeted it out. It's been a couple weeks ago. And I was like, wow. He's definitely aged.
I mean, Feinstein has not added anything to his YouTube channel since the pandemic.
Well, I don't know. But I saw the picture of him, and it says new. It's from 2021, so. Either way, who knows, but.
I mean, I don't even know what convention, and I mean, I guess he would have posted something on, maybe on Facebook or whatever.
Maybe it was Feinstein, maybe it was Hannibal, I don't know.
Okay, because, yeah, if you look, yeah, I mean, he doesn't have gray hair, he has a goatee and stuff in the one from 2014.
But anyway. This is the end of Jason ECW, too, isn't it? I don't think he comes back.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I'm not seeing anything on YouTube. Weird. Just so people understand, no, we do not believe that anyone was checking out other wrestlers' dicks in the showers and telling female fans about it. We think that's a bullshit story.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of Raven, Raven missed the weekend house shows, but did work the TV taping. He will be temporarily working a lighter schedule, but should be back full-time in a few weeks. He's still scheduled to appear at this weekend's Minneapolis TV taping for a title match against Just Incredible. When contacted, Raven told the Torch, Paulie and I are still working on our friendship. For the time being, I'll just be working TV and pay-per-views till we can get everything straightened out like the way it used to be. I have every confidence that our friendship will once again be the same as it was in the glory years of 95-96, when we truly bonded as friends and helped each other step out in the national spotlight. What a way of saying that.
Well, again, for more on this one, patreon.com/betweentheSheets, because there is a lot more here. They just dragged out actually signing a formal contract forever. Remember, he came back in August.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still no contract.
Yeah. Weird.
I think it's a mix of Raven's issues at the time, as well as that it became apparent fairly quickly that he was wanting to do bullshit heavier matches and basically just bide his time until he could go to WWF.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of people that have contracts, Johnny Swinger still hasn't been offered a contract. He worked a match with Dreamer over the weekend, which many consider Dreamer's way of evaluating him. Some in the locker room don't like Swinger because he's too quiet and doesn't socialize with other wrestlers. Defenders of Swinger say he's trying to be polite by keeping to himself. One source noted Swinger doesn't have a read on the locker room, and they don't have a read on him. Mikey and Kid Cash signed a contract over the weekend. Both were given similar deals, which would keep them in East for at least 2 years. The company has said they have options that could keep both men in the fold up to 4 years.
Sure. Oh, and by the way, I mean, since I don't remember if we ended up explaining this on one of the Patreon shows as a follow-up, but since this ties into it, according to Mikey, the whole thing about him, like, developing a plan to take over the school as part of getting a contract is not true.
Okay.
Which was in the newsletters and kind of around all this.
My thing is Swinger here. Just because the guy was trying to, you know, just keep to himself and not ruffle any feathers, ruffle feathers in the East locker room.
It's such a fine line. I mean, there are wrestlers still today who miss out on things they shouldn't because they're maybe a little too nice and keeping to themselves and not keeping up with gossip and stuff enough.
God forbid.
But you get what I'm saying. Like, you got in this business, you need to know what landmines to avoid. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, sometimes being out of the picture is for the best, you know?
Yeah.
Keeping your nose clean. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Jeff Jones was fired. The word coming out of locker rooms that Paul Heyman attempted to contact Joe several times, but Jones avoided his calls because he feared he was about to be let go. Heyman eventually sent Jones a fax notifying him of his termination. Jones worked an XPW show in California over the weekend, more on that later, and cut a promo complaining about being fired by a fax.
Okay, how many weeks earlier was the Torch story that went into the whole deal here?
I don't know.
Or was it after this? Hold on. Okay.
I'm just trying to watch you. I'm trying to listen to you walk over this.
I'm trying to find the Torch cover sidebar that actually goes into what happened. Okay, I found it. It is... Okay, so which... Okay, this is Torch 602. So this is the issue dated May 13th. Okay? So this is after the issues you sourced this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is not as easy to find on the Torch website as it could be because it's one of the old format Torchback issues, and they have each section divided up into its own link. And when Wade was putting this issue together on the website, he mislabeled the link as being related to the main cover story when it was not. So what I'm about to read is in the Torch. This is what is reported at the time. Okay.
All right.
So this is the cover sidebar in Torch 602. ECW fan dies after hotel party by Jason Powell and Wade Keller. At a Holiday Inn bar in Philadelphia after the April 22nd ECW Arena event, CyberSlam, last month, Chris O'Connell, age 23, a friend of Mikey Whipwreck's younger brother, Buck, died from heart failure. The heart failure could have been linked to combining alcohol and drugs hours earlier. A source close to the situation said an autopsy this week came back inconclusive. No police report or criminal charges have been filed regarding the situation. According to multiple sources at the hotel that night, the drugs, supposedly a liquid GHB substitute, so presumably that renutrient stuff that Regal has talked about taking, that O'Connell took hours before he died, came from a bottle that then ECW manager Jeff Jones brought into the bar. The Torch reached Jones for comment on Tuesday, May 9th. He said he wanted to talk to his lawyer before going on record regarding the situation. He did not call back later, nor did he respond to subsequent attempts by the Torch to reach him. Charlie LeGrand, who wrestles as Guillotine LeGrand on the indie scene, told the Torch on May 3rd his version of what happened that night. Quote, "I wasn't present for the actual passing of anything. At some point throughout the evening, I'm guessing it was before 1:30 or 2 a.m. because I think the bar closed around then, but we were all at the bar together. I was doing my own thing. At some point, I was with Jeff, Buck, and Buck's friends. Then they disappeared for whatever reason. I didn't see them. Then Jeff Jones came and found me in the bar. He seemed to be looking to speak with me because he knows I'm friends with Mikey and have that connection with Mikey's brother, Buck," which Wade and Jason note, William Buck Watson, age 25. For those who don't know, Mikey's real name is John Watson. I think it's John Michael Watson, right? Because I think the Mikey comes from somewhere. Anyway, Jones said, "Charlie, I just want you to know that I had a bottle of," I think he referred to it as scoop, which I was unfamiliar with, to be honest with you. He said, "I had a bottle of scoop in my room and Buck drank about half the bottle and his friend was drinking some. And I just want you to know, we got Buck to throw up, but his friend wouldn't throw up. I just want you to know." LeGrand says he doesn't know that Jones actually gave the bottle to O'Connell. He didn't necessarily say that he gave it to him, but this is, quote, "He didn't necessarily say that he gave it to him, but Jones was standing like arm's distance from Buck when Buck showed me the bottle in his pocket. So I don't think he was surprised that Buck had it." On May 3rd, a wrestler present for the events that evening who asked not to be identified backed up LeGrand's story. Quote, "Buck had no idea what the stuff was," he said. "Between Buck and his friend Chris, they drank 3/4 of the bottle. You're only supposed to take a capful or 2 capfuls or something. Buck took the empty bottle back to Jones. Chris Chetty was sitting there and went into a panic and asked Buck what he did. Buck told him, oh, we drank whatever it was. Chetty told Buck, you're going to throw up or I'm going to make you throw up. So Buck threw up. Chetty told Buck, find your friend, Chris, and make him throw up or he is going to die. Being fucked up as he was, Buck went to find him. He went by 2 rooms, and by the time he got to a 3rd room looking for him, he forgot. He was so fucked up. About an hour later, the kid, Chris, was down in the bar and passed out. Security in the bar had him removed from the bar and threw him in the lobby. Buck found the kid, dragged him up to his room, made him throw up, and then threw him in bed face down. I'm not sure if Buck went to bed with him at the time or if he left and came back later. At about 5 a.m., Buck was lying in bed with the kid. The phone rang. Buck reached over the kid to answer the phone and talk for a couple minutes. He hung up, turned over, noticed the kid wasn't breathing and was fucking cold. Buck flipped him over, gave him CPR mouth-to-mouth, and called 911, but he was dead. The Torch contacted several ECW wrestlers, and all were aware of the situation, and none expressed sympathy towards Jones. I've been fortunate enough to be a guest in the ECW locker room and have been subject to nothing but extreme, no pun intended, professionalism on all accounts, LeGrand said. An incident like this puts a damper not only ECW, but a damper on the whole business. It's reckless, it's careless. If people choose to involve themselves in this kind of thing, at least have the damn sense to keep it out of the hands of people who have no need or use for this kind of crap. LeGrand added that ECW should not be blamed for this incident. Quote, "This was an independent act by a man who obviously isn't capable of acting independently. It was completely unrelated to ECW other than the fact that it was Jeff Jones. I don't know what the motive was for whatever the hell he was walking around with to get in the hands of these two guys who had no business or use for it, and obviously weren't aware of what might happen should they abuse it." Added an anonymous ECW wrestler, Of course, Paul let him go when he found out. Then he went to XPW in California and bitched, "I got fired by fax." That's how you get fired in the wrestling business, Jeff. They don't fly you into town and say, "Oh, by the way, you're fired." Then he told people he got fired because he asked for a raise. I know Paul Lee pretty well, and I know for a fact that he doesn't fire people asking for a raise. It's almost impossible to get fired. Okay. You and I had heard this story many times over the years, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we either of us realized until recently that it was covered this in-depth in The Torch. I mean, I don't think there's much to add other than that what we've always heard was similar to that. But that's what it is. I mean, I you know, we want to stress, no one's saying Jeff Jones did anything on purpose, but that's a very legitimate reason to fire someone.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't think there's that much to add to that, right? No. I mean, because the Torch coverage here is pretty detailed and definitive. So we will defer to that.
Yeah. All right. Pioneer Video will start distributing ECW videotapes to retail stores as well as rental chains in August. Pioneer is agreed to sponsor Heatwave pay-per-view. Some of the companies believe Pioneer can give ECW more exposure than Acclaim has.
Okay. This is from The Torch, by the way, as well. As discussed a lot in the Patreon shows, for believing in ECW and actually wanting ECW, and I mean in terms of success too, because the DVDs and tapes did well, Pioneer was easily the best business partner they had in this era.
Yes.
Like, you read those trade stories. They knew what they were getting into. They wanted ECW. They wanted what made ECW unique. They knew how to exploit it. They knew how to market it. They were happy with the sales. Like, it was going great. You know, Acclaim was just looking for a WWF replacement. And, you know, also had their own financial issues that necessitated them feeling like they needed a WWF replacement. And TNN is TNN, who was probably just looking to test a wrestling show until they could get the WWF.
Yeah.
You know, in San Francisco, I guess San Francisco Toymakers we'd need to know about more. All we really know is that in the end, ECW somehow ended up owing them money. I'm assuming they got a loan. But Pioneer clearly had the best relationship with them overall.
Yeah. We talk about more about this on the Patreon show as well. So, all right, in a very controversial move, Paul Heyman never aired the Dreamer Taz title change match on either syndicated TNN shows. Heyman claimed he was never given the proviso by the WWF that Taz doing a job cutting on television, but claimed he did so because he had other things more important to show.
What bullshit. I don't know what his actual reason was. I mean, you know, the match never surfaced until I think one of the ECW DVDs from WWE. But I had other things more important to show. Really?
Yeah.
What do you think his reasoning is here? His actual reasoning?
I think he's just being a bitch. You know, I mean, we talk about this on a Patreon show. I think he's just trying to stick at the TNN, you know.
But he's not showing on syndication either.
I know, it's just stupid.
A lot of things are when talking about ECW on TNN.
Yeah. All right, the TNN show from April 28th was from CyberSlam 2000 in Philadelphia.
Yes, a night where nothing bad happened.
They aired the Cyrus interview where Tajiri refused to give up the TV title to Rhino, set the match where Rhino pinned Tajiri to take the belt after two pile drivers, and Carino and Victory interfered. About 4:30 aired on television. It was a good TV bout. After the match, Cyrus challenged anyone to come out and send it to the network, where Van Damme and Anton came out. Anton got decked and Van Damme clean house, including doing a flip dive off the post way into the aisle. His ankle better be 100% trying out things like that. Cyrus had announced Sandman versus Rhino and Lynn versus Van Damme for the pay-per-view. Lynn came out, told Cyrus to screw off, but not in nice terms. Shut him down and did his healing review. Sinister the Minister and Mikey Whipper did their segment where they ended up laughing hysterically. He was talking in supposed tongues, including saying things like dildo and vagina and Fizzuk Rizzuto. That got through. But they digitized the hand gestures all throughout the show. Oh, man. That's a
wait, did he say dildos and vaginas, or did he say dizildos and...
It just says dildos and vaginas.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Dave said that, and then, you know, did the fizzuck and carny. So
maybe he was going, tongues, gibberish, fizzuck, rizzuso, gibberish, like, the dildos and vagina, but, you know, whatever, something like that.
Yeah. Heyman actually said they had so many commercials because TNA needs the money because they had to raise $100 million spell offense. Man, they showed clips of Karina beating Dusty Rhodes. You can see where there was no heat for the match. They never showed any of the Taz Dreamer switch, which was amazing unto itself. They showed Taz getting a huge reaction coming out. They joined at the Dreamer had won, and Taz had done most of the interview, just showing him hugging Dreamer and doing his catchphrase. Everyone congratulated Dreamer, including Raven, when Credible came out, threw down a tag title, and mimicking what Shane Douglas did in the NBA title, almost with the same wording. Match is okay, that's 6:42. Dreamer juiced from the eye right away. Dreamer gave him a DVD through a table, which legit banged up Credible's back. Dreamer kicked out a spinning tombstone, Incredible kicked out a DDT. Dreamer had him set up for a second DVD in the ring when Francine gave him a low blow to set up spinning tombstone from the pin. Match was average. Yeah, again. Why not show the Taz thing? I mean, just show the pinfall at least. Do something.
I wonder whose idea the finish is, where they do roll-up reversals into Dreamer winning. Like, I wonder, is that Paul, or is that Dreamer and Taz? Is it maybe he didn't like the finish?
I have no idea. I mean, it's just a very weird thing to not show a title change.
It is a weird finish for a Tommy Dreamer versus Taz match, though.
Yes. It's a weird deal altogether. On that night, ECW held up well with the show. They figured to include a title change for Philadelphia, which we talked about what aired and what didn't air, going head-to-head with WF's greatest hits on UPN, which is even a disappointing number. WF did a 2.02 rating and a 4.0 share for a special that was well-promoted. ECW did a 0.88, down from usual, but not bad, considering it was head up against WF. It did a 1.7 share. The show started strong, but didn't have its usual build. As a credible title win, it only got the rating up to 0.91. Roller jams went all the way to 0.57. So, there you go. Hardway Wrestling. They ran in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania on April 28th. This is a TV taping. We had Gregory Martin over Zach Lee. It's spelled that way. Z-A-A-C-K-K-Lee.
Is he Goonie?
Who Flung Poo over Pinky?
It is spelled H-O-O Flung P-O-O. 2000 too early for it to be Pinky Sanchez, right?
I think so. EWF heavyweight title Mercury defeated and retained his title over Even Better.
B-E-D-D-E-R. So I'm guessing he's a bit of like an elitist ladies man character. And Mercury obviously is not Joey Matthews yet because he doesn't get that name till WWE.
Well, yeah. The Hungarian Barbarian over Broadway Danny Rose. George Anthony and the Mongoose over Love Bug and Martial Law.
Yes, Love Bug and Martial Law, who some people might remember from the very early Chikara shows, because they were mainstays in that area of Pennsylvania.
Tiny over Cotton the Bad Butcher.
Sure.
EWF Tag Titles, the Backseat Boys, Johnny Cash and Trent Acid retained over the Bad Crew.
Oh, I wonder whose license they were using.
And EWF heavyweight title, Dino Devine beat Adam Flash to become the new champion.
That was a match that could happen on any Pennsylvania or Maryland indie show in like a 5-year span.
Next we get MCW, Maryland Championship Wrestling. They ran April 29th at the Patuxent High School in Lesby, Maryland. Only 3 matches listed here.
Yeah, I don't think these are full results necessarily, but...
No, Honky Tonk Man over Soda Pop Ronnie Zuko.
That's genius booking right there.
Mae Young and the Fabulous Moolah over Christopher Carmichael and Dino Devine.
Okay. I'm assuming Matt Griffin is at this show, so I'm curious what recollection he has of this match, if any. Because remember, this is the era where he'd be going around with cue ball everywhere.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm trying to remember. Was there a different gimmick that he did when he was Christopher Carmichael?
Oh, I'm sure there was.
Like, is it his Michael Marshall?
Oh, man. It's a shame that QT doesn't do his Michael Marshall gimmick in AEW. It'd be better what he's doing now.
I was kind of surprised that when he turned heel, he wasn't doing anything like that.
Yeah, that was a great character. And then our main event, King Kong Bundy and the Ghetto Mafia, toot up and sideswipe over Chad Bowman, Chip Bowman, and Jimmy Cicero.
And of course, Chad Bowman is friend of the show, Chad Austin.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a very Maryland show in a few different ways. Can't I ever expect to see results where Bundy was teaming with Too Dope and Sideswipe, though?
what a match that is.
Like, what's next? King Kong Bundy teaming with the Outcast Killers? King Kong Bundy teaming with All Money is Legal?
A hubby team of Yar and Wolf. The Lost Boys.
I wonder if he ever teamed with Bad Crew.
Dog and Rose. Next, we get Joe Pedicino.
Hey!
Ran his first show in LaGrange, Georgia on April 29th before 230 fans. He's an NWA Worldwide guys and even did an interesting double, having several WCW wrestlers on the show. Jamie Son, Jimmy Noble, Yun Yang, Jimmy Yang, Paisley, Mona, Ron Harris, Finley, and Terry Taylor. Headlined the show with Jerry Lawler. Taylor did a gimmick telling Chris Harris that if he could beat him, he'd sign to a WCW contract. Chris Harris won, and Taylor told him that you could never believe a promise made in wrestling.
Wow. And of course, who starts in WCW around this time?
Chris Harris.
Yes. Yes.
Let's read the results here. We got an interesting show. Big Bully Douglas over AJ Styles in your opening match. Jamie Son over Yun Yang and Adam Jacobs. Bad Attitude, Rick Michaels and David Young over to New South, Ashley Hudson and Corey Williams. Paisley, of course, Charmel, over Mona, Crash Holly, Molly Holly. Good Lord. Ron Harris over David Fit Finley.
Okay.
Chris Harris over Terry Taylor. And then the Colorado Kid retained his North America title, beating Jerry the King Lawler.
And for those of you who haven't listened to the Exile Wildside shows, the reason this is using Bert Prentice's guys and not Wildside is because there's not really a Wildside yet.
Yeah, there
not
is.
Exactly.
Yes, there is. We're
well, wait, was it 99? I'm sorry, I got the date confused. That's right, it was 99.
So now you're 99. Earlier you were in 2001.
No. I got the timeline mixed up of when they started doing Wildside. Okay. So that is weird then, though. Although, wasn't there also, like, NWA Georgia that was kind of in between?
Yeah, but Joe and Bert have a long relationship, so working together.
Well,
so.
Bert and Ninja Bill were working together, too, so.
So, I mean, yeah, a lot of these talent is the same talent that's working Wildside as well, so shit.
I mean, I don't think AJ was working Bert shows at this time, was he?
Yeah.
Oh,
they were going to Nashville. Oh, yeah.
Was Adam Jacobs, too?
Pretty sure he probably was.
Now, Bad Attitude, I know, were.
Well, of course. I mean, a lot of these guys were going back and forth doing shots here and there.
Yeah, so interesting show either way. But, I mean, also, when you consider that one of his best friends is one of... Well, actually, wait. Was Steve one of the Wildside announcers yet? By this point?
2000.
I'm not sure.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so that is the part I think that makes it a little surprising that it's
him
more...
and Al are the announcers at this point in time, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. That's what threw me more than anything else, that
but
you
still
would...
they all worked. I mean, they're
but
all
but still together. They're all the same family.
They're all together.
Yes.
All right, OBW. They ran two shows here in Louisville area. May 2nd at St. Teresa's Gym. We have Robbie D over Shelton Benjamin. Jack Black of the Andretti Express, Guido and Vito in a handicap match.
Jack Black is Mr. Black, I'm guessing?
Maybe it's the actor, I don't know. Southern Tag Titles, the Pain Thrillers, BJ Payne and Scotty Sabre retained over Suicide Blondes, Derek King and Jason Lee. Jack Black and the Collector over Rob Conway and Russ McCullough. In a 2-3 falls match for the OVW Heavyweight title, Damage went to double count out with Nick Densmore.
Okay. What's interesting to me about these results is that they're running the show and there's exactly one, well, two, because Robbie D. So there's two developmental guys on this show. Well, three, excuse me, Russ McCullough. Still, that's not a lot, all things considered.
that's kind of why they're in the indie section. May 3rd in Davis Arena in Jeffersonville, Damage retained WWE title, beating Jack Black by DQ. Flash Flanagan over Chris Michaels, Judas over Randy Royal, all three Suicide Blondes, Derek King, Jason Lee, and Rip Rogers over Ali, BJ Payne, and Scotty Sabre. And Rob Conway and The Collector went to a no contest of Russ McCullough and Trailer Park Trash.
The Collector, of course, being Sylvester Turkay.
Mm-hmm.
I had forgotten that they still had this few developmental guys at this point. Because it's been developmental since, what, like the middle of 99? Summer, maybe?
Well, some of these guys are there, but they're not working shows.
Well, that too, that maybe we've got people that Danny and Cornette think are too green to work shows at this point.
Yeah. All right. I didn't miss out. The Rival promotion.
Yeah.
This time. In Charlestown, Indiana, we have two shows. April 28th at the House Hardcore. Richard X over Prophet Quinn.
Who's Prophet Quinn?
Manawa will tell us. Okay. Rolling Hard over Jaden Drago. Nathan Future over Tyron. Heavyweight title. Suicide Kid retained over Jay Prodigy. And Fast in the Weapons match, Ian Rotten and Ox Harley over Blaze of Corporal Robinson. And Derby Madness on May 3rd. Richard X over Jaden Drago, Corporal Robinson over Ox Harley, Jay Prodigy over Rolling Hard, Ian Rotten over Nathan Future, Suicide Kid over Prophet Quinn, Blaze over Delilah Starr, and a War Games. Delilah Starr, Ian Rotten, Ox Harley, Rolling Hard, Suicide Kid over Nathan Future, Jay Prodigy, Corporal Robinson, Blaze, and Prophet Quinn.
So still a promotion in transition.
It was very local.
Yes.
The Chicago crew might come in. And
not even Hero yet at this point.
Yeah.
But some interesting stuff here. You know, Suicide Kid, very underrated. Jaden Drago, I don't think I had realized was in IWA this early, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to know more about him. Because my understanding is he was in the same initial Shawn Michaels wrestling school classes. Danielson, Kendrick, Cade, Shooter Schultz, etc.
Yeah.
And it's not like he was bad.
He wasn't bad.
No, he was perfectly fine wrestler. So I wonder what the deal is like, because I don't think he worked any TWA TVs or anything, did he?
I don't remember him doing it.
So I'd love to know what the actual story is there. I mean, I remember them making the joke on commentary when Bradley J was working as a heel that he was the Jaden Drago. Well, no, I forget. No. I forget if it was this way or the other way around. They either said he was the Jaden Drago of Steel Domain, or they said Jaden Drago was the Brad Bradley of TWA.
Either or.
And I thought Brad Bradley was good, but whatever.
Music City Wrestling. Their TV on April 29 was built in the beginning.
Well, wait a second. So why is Dave calling it Music City in one spot? Yeah, wait a second. No, you mislabeled as Music City.
Memphis
That's why.
Championship Wrestling, sorry.
Yeah, it took me a second, and then I see Jerry Lawler versus K-Crush.
Yeah, Memphis Championship Wrestling, my mistake. April 29th was built in the beginning around Lawler and K-Crush and Bull Payne and Todd Morton versus the Mean Street Posse for the NCW Tag Titles. Posse was built from Germantown, Tennessee, which is a rip suburb of Memphis. That's great. The Mullets interfered, costing the Posse the match. MCW Commissioner Bruce Pritchard told Curtis Hughes he wanted him to be his enforcer to limit man-on-woman violence. Don Montoya debuted.
I have no memory of this.
What a bunch of stuff going on here. They set a match for that evening at the New Daisy Theater with Lord Steven Regal versus Reckless Youth, where if Youth won, Regal would have to shake his hand, and if Regal won, Youth would have to kiss his feet. They also had Jazz of St. Clair versus Bobcat set up for a swimsuit match. And Bull Payne told Bruce Pritchard he abused women anytime he wanted, and he abused Pritchard as well. Jasmine managed to Blue Meanie in a match, or Blue Boy, with Jim the Animal Neidhart, which Meanie won. And they announced Meanie and K-Crush in a Loser Leaves Town match.
There's a lot going on here.
This is an interesting promotion. I've watched some of their TV over the past few months, and yeah, it's something else.
I mean, all of the MCW stuff is a hoot in general. Like, even the stuff that's not as good. Lance Russell's there sometimes. You'll get Lance Russell calling Daniel Bryan versus Brian Kendrick matches. And also at this point in 2000, I believe you still have the remnants of the kick-ass wrestling versus MCW feud.
Well, that's where Bull Payne and Tom Morton.
Right. So I guess this is before they're the BMFs in IWA with Mitch Ryder.
They're not the bad motherfuckers here, of course.
No, they're team kick-ass or whatever. Here, their thing is basically they're the guys who are like, this is bullshit that Jerry Lawler came in and made this Memphis Championship Wrestling. We still want it to be kick-ass wrestling.
Yeah, pretty much.
And, I mean, it's just a fun promotion. I mean, I haven't seen the Regal Reckless Youth stuff in a long time, but those matches are really good from what I remember. And just a bunch of interesting stuff here. I'm assuming Reckless got Montoya shot.
I think so.
But I'd love to know more to that story. Because, look, Don Montoya was a heck of a worker, and by all accounts, is a super nice guy. There is no way on earth WWE would have signed him in 2000.
No. Well, Rival Power Pro Wrestling built up their TV to set up a Wolf VD defending the title against Ali match for May 6th. There was an article in the Memphis Commercial Appeal about the head-to-head Wrestling World Channel 5 and 30 on Channels 5 and 30 on Saturday mornings. It said both groups did identical 3 ratings over the past month.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so they're combining for a 6 on Saturday morning, you know, in 2000.
I'm curious what the shares are.
Yeah.
You know? Probably a good bit higher. I didn't realize the shows aired opposite each other, too.
Yeah.
So, I'm guessing that changes once they start working together, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Let me see if I can find that article, too, because I do have a news library subscription. But anyway, let's move on, in the meantime, to Juggalo Championship Wrestling.
The Agora Theater in Cleveland, Ohio, on May the 4th, as the Hornswoggling Hillbilly. Hornswoggle wasn't the first guy named Hornswoggle to wear Cleveland, beating Tom Dub. Hi-Zai over Chris Hero. Yeah, Chris Hero. Double tables match, Billy Bill over Dick Nipple. Death match, Man Pondo over Fat Fuck Barrel Boy. And then a steel cage match, Abdullah the Butcher over the Rude Boy.
All right, I'm not sure there's much we can say about that other than that, for some reason, I love the name Dick Nipple, but
it's it's ICP, I'm surprised they didn't wrestle here. It's a JCW show, so there you go.
Yeah, that's what a JCW show looks like in that era. I'm surprised there's no Evil Dead on the card.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what?
No, I found the article.
Okay, go ahead.
So it's not long. It's from the April 27th Commercial Appeal headline. Wrestling and Lawler keep a king-size scissors hold on Memphis by Tom Walter. A mayoral race and legal problems notwithstanding, be that as it may, and then from there, and Memphis wrestler Jerry Lawler, in Memphis, there's a comma there that, excuse me, there's a comma that should be there. In Memphis, wrestler Jerry Lawler always will be king. What a country, huh? Lawler, a fixture on a local Memphis television for decades, hasn't gone away after finishing third in last year's mayoral race, and he hasn't gone exclusively national with his commentary on World Wrestling Federation events. Lawler had been on WMC TV Channel 5's wrestling show since the 70s, but in 1996 he sold the USWA to an outfit called XL Sports, and the USWA soon went bust. The show left the air, but a new show, Power Pro Wrestling, replaced it. Without Lawler, that's not what happened. Lawler was there at the beginning. Power Pros existed for 2 years. What? Anyway, instead, he's on LMT TV Channel 30, 11 a.m. Saturday. The show, Memphis Championship Wrestling, which essentially features a WWF farm team. Not coincidentally, Channel 30 airs UPN's WWF SmackDown on Thursday night. And Lawler and his girlfriend, Stacy Carter, who wrestles under the name The Cat, co-host WWF's Greatest Hits, too. A compilation of WWF events from this past season. You know, they're talking about the special we talked about earlier. Wrestling has exploded across the country in recent years, but that's not news to Memphians. At one point, the Channel 5 show garnered just about the highest audience share of any show seen in Memphis. Why are they throwing the just about in there?
I don't know.
They were doing like 70 shares. And 20 plus ratings. Anyway, the previous Thursday SmackDown was the highest rated program in Memphis in its time slot. So why does wrestling continue to captivate Memphians? And why does SmackDown rule? I'm not necessarily trying to blow my own horn. I'm on the show and heard throughout the entire show, but I think there's just a rich history of wrestlers on that show that have come through Memphis, Lawler said. I think the people feel a certain bond. For instance, The Rock, the top star in the WWF, he started here in Memphis on the Channel 5 show. People got to see him develop and then go to WWF and become the top attraction in the world. And if you're a Memphian, you take what you can get. Quote, all these years we've craved major league sports and never really had them. It always was wrestling that has been the one solid form of entertainment that's been here throughout the years, he said. Channel 30 officials are happy too. They not only get to stick it to Channel 5, the shows went head-to-head during the February sweeps and essentially tied each other in the ratings with a 3.7 share. Okay, so there we go. So not only were they doing a combined 6 rating, even at this point, 2000, where things are really changing, they're doing a combined 14 share.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but SmackDown and Memphis Championship Wrestling are used to promote each other. It really helps having something on the network you can cross-promote, said Channel 30 general manager Jack Peck. I had talked to Lawler before about doing a wrestling show, but it didn't make overall sense for us. Once we got SmackDown, it made sense going against Power Pro Wrestling. Think of Memphis Championship Wrestling as WWF's little brother. Quote, we have a developmental deal with the WWF. They send their talent under contract to the WWF here to Memphis, and if they're not being used currently or if they're going to bring them up in a short time. Memphis Championship Wrestling wasn't here. Those guys basically would be staying at home. Here, they're getting exposure. Lawler got some exposure he didn't like when XL Sports, which bought the USWA, sued him in federal court for, among other things, fraud. He was exonerated last spring, but XL Sports is appealing the verdict. And XL recently has filed a similar suit in Tennessee State Court. Through it all, Lawler remains undaunted and relatively unharmed. At 50, he shows few signs of giving up the wrestling life. I like to say I was smart enough not to spend the first half of my life acquiring habits that would force me not to do things in the second part of my life, he said. That's an interesting bit of phrasing there.
Yeah.
But how about that, though? 2000, the local wrestling is still doing a combined 14 share.
Yeah.
That's Memphis wrestling.
Yeah.
You know what I'd be curious to see? How the ratings were on weeks where Lance was on MCW.
I'm sure they were higher.
I gotta think so.
Well, speaking of getting higher, let's go to XPW. Sabu is the new XPW champion, winning a one-night tournament on April 29th in Bakersfield, California, beating John Cronus, Damian Steele, and the Messiah in the finals. Chris Candido held the title, but he no-showed the previous night in Ventura. They did an angle where Rob Black appeared on the video screen in a fake phone call telling Candido not to show up as part of their promoter versus promoter feud. Supposedly, Sabu will defend a title on the May 5th FMW show against Mr. Gatosuke, which makes a strange political deal, because Paul Heyman would be sitting Paul's Mahoney and New Jack to that same show, and SPW and ECW at this point appear to be at odds. After being fired by facts by Heyman earlier in the week, Jeff Jones appeared at the Ventura show on April 28th and did the typical name-calling bit. Speaking of SPW, two stars of a new bondage video put out by SPW owner Rob Black's company are John Cronus and Nicole Bass. I'm sure that is an amazing video. The group's next major
show. Have you ever seen the cover art?
No. The group's next major show is May 26th at the Los Angeles Sports Arena. All right. The results of these shows are Tool over Dynamite D, The West Side Ends over Kid Chaos and Steve Rizzono. I like how Dave abbreviated the NGZ.
So that was their name?
Mm-hmm. Pogo the Clown over Homeless Jimmy. It's 2000. Damian Steele over Carlito Montana. The Messiah over Johnny Webb. Public Enemy over Axel Rotten and Supreme. And Sabu over John Cronus. And then the next night in Bakersfield, in the tournament, Messiah over Johnny Webb. Damian Steele over Carlito. Sabu over John Cronus. Axel Rotten, no contest. Homeless Jimmy. Sabu over Damian Steele. Sabu over Messiah. Tool over Dynamite D, Pogo over Jake Lawless, Public Enemy won a three-way over the West Side Ends, and Kid Chaos and Steve Rizzono. XPW. Huh.
Yeah, it is kind of fascinating, though, like, that I guess out of spite that Paul wouldn't let him invest in ECW or anything, that he was so set, Rob Black, on just getting at Paul.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no reason to... Like, he had no reason to do any of this.
Rob Lett didn't have a reason to do a lot of things he did, but he did, so there you go.
No, and I'm... Okay. Yeah, I found, because it was an exhibit in the Nicole Bass sexual harassment lawsuit, I did find the cover art from the Bondage video, which is titled Violence on Violence.
Okay.
Nicole Bass, the world's largest female bodybuilder, stars in Violence on Violence. Kind of dark with hindsight, since I'm not sure John Peronis would legally be able to consent to appear in that on his own. But whatever. Who knows exactly who knew what at the time about that.
Well, that's a way to close it out, I guess.
Well, so it's XBW. What do you expect?
That's it for part two. If you haven't listened to part one yet, go listen to that. That's where the main close of the show is, the end of that show. So that's it for us here. So, Bix, thank you for being the Rocco Show. This is Chris, and so long from the Peach State of Georgia.